Hello all, so glad to be back this week. Last week there was a technical issue and hence we could not do a podcast. That makes this one just before the Rakhi a very special one. But first, you are tuning in to the Audible Weed Walk episode 54. This is Nina welcoming you. Sunday 22nd is Rakhi Purnima or full moon. It is the last day of the month of Shravan by several Indian calendar. You know Ashar and Shravan, these 2 months makes the rainy season as per the southwestern monsoon. In Tamil Nadu, our rain comes later, of course. But for rest of India, the last day of Shravan marks the official end of the rainy season. It is also the beginning of several festivities. To start with, we have the festival of Raksha Bandhan on this day itself. Raksha Bandhan literally means the bond of protection or care. Is one of the several festivals from Hindu tradition practiced in many forms across South Asia that involves brothers and sisters. In this particular one, sister ties an amulet or a talisman around the brother's wrist, wishing for his protection, and in turn is showered with gifts as per the brother's ability. In olden days, it was kind of a promise of protection to the sister. There are many variations of this, for example, Ram Rakhi in Rajasthan, where the Rakhi is tied to the deity, or Chuda Rakhi, where it is tied to the bangles of the sister-in-law. The day marks the other festivities, like, you know, worshipping Varuna or sea god in Maharashtra, as the sea becomes calm after the turbulent monsoon time. However, typically this festival is not so prevalent in South or in the Eastern India, where I come from. Still, in the urban areas, shops are full of this decorated talisman called Rakhi and various possible gifts. Growing up, we made Rakhi with silk threads and then with whatever we used to, you know, decorate it. I used to raid my mother's bead box and craft box for sequins and trinkets to decorate. We did not give Rakhi to our brothers, but we made several to gift to our friends. Don't know where this practice comes from. This is totally irreligious. Perhaps came from the observance of Rakhi as a symbol of human unity and friendship across religion, as initiated by none other than Rabindranath Tagore. You see, partition of India was not an eventual consequence, but a pre-planned move, which was already triggered once in Bengal, much before our independence. In 905, Bengal, which was considered present-day West Bengal, Assam, parts of Bihar, Orissa, and the entire country of Bangladesh, it was planned to be divided on the basis of religion, and it was divided. The move was looked upon as a political divide and rule strategy, since Bengal was the seat of many socio-political and cultural movements at that time. Why the heck am I reminding you of all this history lesson? Well, it is about Rakhi. As a protest against this move, Rabindranath Tagore invited, as a mark of solidarity and harmony between faiths, by tying Rakhi on this day between people of different religion. This call was highly successful, and several places across Bengal Presidency, large number of people came out in this celebration of oneness and tied Rakhi and triggered a protest movement that had managed to overturn the partition of 905 sometime around 1912. Power of this little talisman, right? What now exists of this tradition is perhaps what I just described, a friendship band that we exchange. No, we are not talking about traditional food that are eaten during Rakhi in this podcast. Actually, much of the food cultures sticks to the food that in across India, it's eaten during the rainy days. Fruits and vegetables are eaten that are dried and stored. For example, lentil, chana, or chickpeas, potatoes, flowers, or those that are growing above grounds, like gourds of all kinds, including pumpkin, bitter gourds, bottle gourds, etc. But not much of fresh green are eaten this season. The food itself differ in different parts of the country. For example, in north, chole bhature, or the puffed fried puris with a spicy tangy chickpea curry, are traditional. Along comes the whole load of sweets. Most of them are made with flour base and fried stuff too. After all, fried food, despite all its drawbacks, provide a good source of vitamin E. I guess after the rains, a bit of indulgence with the fried stuff is okay. But I'm not talking about Rakhi for that. Rakhi, if you noticed, over the years have become quite a personalized expression of aesthetics, craft, and even value one represents. It matters if you are making Rakhi on your own. Purchase handmade ones as opposed to purchase an elaborate mass-produced one. While purchasing handmade Rakhi, one can decide to support various expressions of sustainability. Some Rakhi are made from recycled materials or involved a certain groups of craftsperson who need help. For example, women self-help group, Dalit cooperatives, or indigenous peoples group, or such other sustainability values. As customer, you may want to choose those that are linked to your own universal values, and therefore a simple Rakhi becomes an agent of your care and what you stand for. It's time for conscious buying. This year, the option stood out for me. That was from Udit, where it's a group where Rakhi were handcrafted by Dang tribes. And there was this another called Gramat Initiative. Here, not just the Rakhi, but each thread had a story to tell. The initiative itself grows desi or non-BT variety of cotton that are handspun by the village cooperative in Wardha. And back to the village where the plant is grown, the thread is dyed with natural dyes by the village women's group. The blue ones, for example, were dyed with wild and grown butterfly pea flower or Clitoria ternatia. We know it as Shankhapushpi and is quite popular now. The picture of the blue Rakhi you see on the meme associated with this podcast is made by them. Each Rakhi was well designed and seed inserted of some of the plants, like including the butterfly pea, in the Rakhi itself, so you can grow, when you have received and done with the Rakhi. Or, even pumpkin and other seeds. Even the paper on which the Rakhis were mounted are seed papers made in the village itself and contain seeds of amaranth and purslane and tulsi, etc., which are hard, weedy, and wild. I mean, they have that wild varieties also. Yes, you got it right. Many of them are the of these wild, weedy plants may actually grow from the paper itself. Isn't that awesome? My own experience with seed papers and seed pencils are not that great, but reading about this initiative, I was really interested to try out. If seed papers have to be successful in actually growing, I think the wild, weedy plants have a much greater chance. You see, how a simple thing like Rakhi, whether you give it to your brother or your friends or members of the other community, it can be so special and different. This set me thinking, what about using cordage made by some wild, weedy plants themselves? Looking at the plants already in my book and those that grows in this area and awaiting to be featured in the next publication, when we have raised enough funds for it, of course, I could, without having to, do more research, come up with a few. Hibiscus subterifera. This plant is mentioned in the book, but its wilder cousin, a close relative, its picture is given, which is Hibiscus suratensis. Hibiscus subterifera is Rosella, better known as Gongura, Pulichikerei, Kattabhindi, or Chukoir in different Indian languages. It produces such good cordage that even it was even commercially traded as a substitute for jute in the heydays of jute, when natural fibers were mostly used for transporting grains and other goods. Actually, most all hibiscus should be a good source of local cordage, including the stalks of okra or bhindi once they have finished growing and dry up. Then there is, of course, Celosia argentea or coxcomb, which is also in my book. The matured stalk is a good source. Same with other amaranth, like amaranth tricolor, for example. Once they mature, they can be used. Of course, there are other like that are not in the book, like some of the mallows, bar mallows and East India mallows, for example. All edible plants loaded with nutrition, micronutrients, and in addition, they can be made into rakhis. Isn't that something? Actually, not just thread, some of them can be woven into basket also. Both dried Rosella stalks, coxcomb, and other viney ones can be used for that. So we can actually collect the leaves in a basket woven by the stalks from time to time, use the cordage for our usage and even crafts, like something like rakhi. That's so cool. What would that rakhi look like? Well, check it out. I will include a picture of the wristbands made with natural fiber by an artist called Susie Grieve in the background when I post the podcast in the YouTube channel on Tuesday. By the way, the Edible Weed and Naturally Growing Plant book is all set to reprint. It should take a few months. In the meantime, we are getting close to opening up for pre-ordering. However, cannot figure out what is the best and the easiest way for people to pre-order and/or to make a donation towards future publications, or even sponsor copies for schools who cannot afford. Any thoughts on that? How to set it up? If you have any thoughts, please email me at edibleweedwalk@gmail.com, or find Edible Wheat Walk in the Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube, and write me there. I'm really interested, really exploring this. That's all for now. Enjoy the Rakhi, however you celebrate, but celebrate definitely. Stay well and stay safe, and see you next week.
This is Auroville Radio.